The following is a special encore presentation of TERP Weekly Edition.
Coming up on TERP Weekly Edition, a special report, Out of the Shadows.
You know, it's hard to explain unless it's happened to you. It's not only are you taken advantage of, but you're violated.
Well, the next day, you're like, I could have gotten arrested last night for what I did.
I just felt so betrayed because I felt betrayed from the guy that raped me because I thought he was my friend. I felt betrayed from the guy that I was dating because I thought he actually cared about me. It's very difficult.
This is TERP Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello and welcome to this TERP Weekly Edition special report. I'm Rustinello. For most of the past academic year, students on campus have been hit with full-page ads in the Diamondback, and special cards and flyers around the university that say simply, "Got consent?" The ads are designed to raise awareness about sexual assault. It's a campaign that's been tried at other universities. Yet, studies show the number of college women being sexually assaulted remains a problem. Our TERP Weekly Edition reporters have teamed up to talk with the victims, look at the culture, and examine the question of justice. What we found is a system where the numbers may not be what they seem, and justice may be hard to find. We begin with the victims, who've asked that we not use their names. One national survey estimates that as many as 1 in 5 women will be raped during their college years. But, as you'll learn, only a small percentage will ever be reported. We'll have more on that later in this report. Sexual assault and rape on campus are far more common than many think. TERP Weekly Edition's Carly Rubel and Diana Abriola talked with 5 victims, all of them University of Maryland students, who agreed to help us bring the issue of sexual assault on campus out of the shadows. Diana Abriola has their stories.
It's one of those things, like, you hear about it happening all the time, and it's, like, really upsetting, and you feel bad for people who it happens to, and then all of a sudden, it's your life, and it's completely different.
1 in 8 women on campus will be raped, according to the university's Office of the Victim Advocate, and 80 to 85% of those rapes will be committed by acquaintances.
You feel so much betrayal because, I mean, I think I would have felt better if it was just some random person raping me because you don't expect that to be your friends.
It's just, like, a really, like, terrible feeling thinking that, like, that could happen to you, you know, especially with someone you trust, and it's crazy.
This violent crime, which often leaves victims with more than just physical scars, frequently goes unreported. The few victims who do come forward help shed light on this disturbing crime, which touches the lives of so many college women.
There's a lot of us there. It was completely packed. Everyone had too much to drink.
One of my friends, or at least who I thought was my friend, I was confiding in him about, like, my relationship problems.
One of our guy friends was leaving, and he was like, "Listen, I'll just take her home."
A friend of mine started coming on to me.
I was really drunk, but I was still like, no, you know, like, get off, you know, like, I, you know, but then, I mean, he wouldn't listen.
He came into the room, and he was in bed with me, and he kept saying that I wanted it.
And then he did rape me.
The physical act of rape is just the beginning of what sometimes becomes a lifelong struggle.
The whole thing was really surreal. So the day of, I was just kind of trying to understand what happened.
I remember saying no, and I remember saying I wanted to use a condom, and he told me, he decided to, even though I asked him, I told him I didn't want to know the details, I didn't want to know what had happened. He told me everything he'd done and laughed at me.
It was, like, surreal. Like, I didn't even know what to make of it. It was, first of all, I was, like, disgusted that he could even, like, have any desire to, like, do that to me.
Confronting the rape can be difficult for victims who experience a range of emotions and often feel ashamed.
I was so embarrassed. I was at a new school. I didn't know anyone that well. It's not really a topic I can talk about with my family. So I just dealt with it on my own. Like, I was so ashamed that it happened to me that I was, like, I'd lost control.
The next day I went to the health center to get Plan B, and then they have this little, like, questionnaire, like, oh, you know, did your condom fail, or did you not use a condom, or what? And then they had a question, was it non-consensual? And then it was just, like, weird to see that and, like, have to check that. It was just very surreal.
I was embarrassed enough that, you know, like, everyone knew about it since, it, like, the way it had come out. You know, it wasn't, like, something, like, between me and him that, like, I did, you know, could keep to myself. It was, like, made public. People knew about it before I did, which was, you know, really humiliating. So yeah, like the last thing I wanted to do was bring more attention to it.
Natalie Braver from the Office of the Victim Advocate says that peer advocates always let women know that they have choices in dealing with the repercussions of their rape.
When someone is raped, their power and control is taken away from them, and our job is to give them, help them regain power and empower them. And by giving them their options and then having them choose what they want to do, obviously empowers them.
I mean, for me, being raped, one of the hardest things is just having to deal with the aftermath.
This aftermath is different for every woman. However, Braver says that victims commonly exhibit similar reactions.
A lot of the time people are sort of shocked that it happened. And there are three things that we always talk about that we see. Minimization, avoidance, and denial.
The whole just what it does to you as a person. I mean, it's hard to explain unless it's happened to you. It's just a feeling of, like, not only are you taken advantage of, but you're violated.
Although rape is a serious crime, many victims feel that the process of taking the offender to court, being forced to retell their story and relive the attack, is just more trouble than it's worth.
At the time, I ended up not prosecuting. And I just didn't want to have to deal with all of it again. You know, like, I didn't want that to suck up my life for the next year, having to go to court and testify over and over again.
Alcohol is often involved in rapes occurring on college campuses. Its role, as well as the fear that others may doubt their stories, can also deter victims from going to police.
I figured there was no one else there. It was my word against his. I was drunk. I was underage. I figured no one would believe me and nothing would come of it. I guess I was embarrassed.
The Office of the Victim Advocate's Natalie Braver assures victims that the involvement of alcohol does not make rape less serious.
Regardless of what the police like have to say about it, rape is rape. Alcohol involved or not, every woman has a right to go out and get drunk in college if she wants to, you know? In no way is she asking to be raped by being drunk.
Because of the stigma and some of the false beliefs surrounding rape, many victims partially blame themselves after the attack.
I pretty much felt it was my fault. I shouldn't have gone with him. I shouldn't have drunk. I shouldn't have whatever. I should have left.
To this day, I don't let myself get that drunk. I barely drink at all. Just because if I lose, like, my control, then, you know, it's kind of like you look back and you're like, well, I shouldn't have been that drunk, and you blame yourself.
However, no matter the circumstances, the advocates say a woman should never feel responsible for being raped.
People always ask, oh, you know, where were you? What were you doing? How do you know him? What were you wearing? Like, all that kind of stuff that, I mean, like, really doesn't have anything to do with it, you know, but everyone puts all this stigma around it.
Rape victims tend to have a different reaction to sexuality after the attack. Natalie Braver explains.
Hypersexuality and hyposexuality. Some women, hypo, don't want any contact with another person in a sexual manner. And some women go out and have sex with a lot of men to show, to prove, not to prove to themselves, but to get back power, to be like, I can choose who I'm having sex with.
And the victims that we spoke with admit that their views on sexuality did change.
To me, sex didn't mean the same thing that it did before. So I could have sex with someone, and I didn't care. Like, I didn't have any emotional attachment or connection or anything. It was just, for me, it was just a physical thing.
It took me a really long time to trust guys again. My boyfriend now, he understood. I explained to him that it would take me a while before I could be intimate with anyone and before I could really trust him. And he was understanding, but it did. It took me a long time.
I felt like since I lost my virginity so close to the time that I was raped, like, my whole sexuality was dominated by this rape.
Not only does rape have an effect on a victim's view of sexuality, it can also impact how she looks at men in general.
Several months after I was raped, immediately after, I was just afraid of all men. And it was really sad.
Rape can have a significant impact on a victim's relationships with family members as well.
But my dad definitely had lots of issues dealing with it. And he did blame me for it, which is another thing that was really difficult, you know, because I know that he loves me and everything, and his own issues with it are his own, but it still hurts a lot to have someone who is supposed to support you and they can't.
It takes some time to overcome the emotions and obstacles that follow being raped. But when victims are able to come to terms with what happened and realize they are not at fault, they can move on.
One of the quotes I found that I really liked is that
making poor decisions is not a rapeable offense. That no one has the right to do something to me just because I didn't make the best decisions to start with.
We should also note that none of the women we spoke with elected to pursue charges against the offender. In College Park, I'm Diana Abriola, reporting for Terp Weekly Edition.
While researching our special report, Terp Weekly Edition found many misconceptions about sexual assault and its victims. One common myth? That only females are victims of sexual assault. According to a 2006 estimate by the Rape, Assault, and Incest National Network, males make up to 10% of sexual assault victims. According to a 2006 survey by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 1 in 33 men will be victim to an attempted or completed rape in their lifetime. Terp Weekly Edition reporter Lauren Peteroy has more on the issue widely ignored by our society, male victims of sexual assault.
Make no mistake about it, men are victims of sexual assault, including rape. But as Terp Weekly Edition found out, when it comes to being a victim, men have a lot in common with women when it comes to reporting it.
I don't think any guy would admit it. Yeah. Well, no, probably not.
No, I just say, like, yeah, I made a mistake.
The university's Office of the Victim Advocate says a dozen men came in for counseling during 2007, compared with 104 women. But of those men who sought help, the Victim Advocate's office says most were probably what they call secondary victims. Elise Cannon, a peer advocate, explains.
Secondary victim would be like the boyfriend of a woman who was sexually assaulted. So they're having issues on their own dealing with someone close to them that's been victimized. And a primary victim is that male has himself been victimized.
According to Cannon, males have even more reason for not seeking help.
They fear being ignored, laughed at, disbelieved, questioned about being gay. And perhaps worst of all, men fear being blamed for the assault because they were not man enough to protect themselves. So it's like a whole other bag of issues with male victims coming forward and seeking help.
Another myth to add into the mix? Male victims of male-on-male sexual assault are gay. The fact is, rape and sexual assault are crimes of violence. They aren't about sexual preference. Male-on-male sexual assault can happen between any man, gay or straight. Campus Sexual Assault Prevention Coordinator Molly Monahan says in her experience, most male-on-male rapes involve heterosexual men.
An interesting thing to note about male sexual violence against men is that those perpetrators are predominantly heterosexual. So it's power and control kind of thing, it's a degradation kind of thing, as opposed to it being sexual at all.
Females will perpetrate rape as well, but according to recent studies, 86% of male survivors are sexually abused by another male. The campus office of the victim advocate says, what many male victims misconstrue is that if they get an erection, it wasn't rape. What they don't realize is erections are involuntary, and penetration, forcible or otherwise, will cause most men to get an erection. While most male victims will remain silent about their experiences with sexual assault, Cannon says it's important for men to know they aren't alone.
Most research suggests that 10 to 20% of all males will be sexually violated at some point in their lifetimes. So this translates into tens of thousands of boys and men assaulted each year.
The Office of the Victim Advocate says the best way to prevent rape is to keep people educated. And this includes male victims who often know too little about rape to realize that it's okay to get help. In College Park, this is Lauren Peteroy, reporting for Terp Weekly Edition.
Rape and sexual assault are not crimes of passion, but crimes of violence. It's a difficult message to get across to both the victim and the offender. And what about the offender? Many experts say the perpetrator is often confused by a culture that sends out mixed signals. Men often see it as a conquest, women as a personal violation. To examine that culture and find out what some college men have to say on the topic, I joined with Terp Weekly Edition reporter Scott Kaptur in a discussion with a group of men on campus to try and separate the myths from the reality. Scott has that part of the story.
The guy doesn't even know it because one night they were both drunk, no consent was given, clear consent, like yes or no. It was just like nothing.
But you think most times the guy doesn't even realize it?
Yeah.
There appears to be a clear divide in attitudes between men and women about rape. The men we talked with said the issue is much too hazy. So we asked, who's to blame when something goes wrong?
You feel like walking back to your place and you're stumbling drunk. You're just
I hate to say asking for it. This is not to make it sound like it's the rape is less than a rape, but you should know better. Like, come on.
And you see a girl being very flirty, and, like, a lot of guys, that like, sets off a trigger in their head. Like, all right, maybe this girl is,
that's
like...
That's what this girl's looking for.
Campus Sexual Assault Prevention Coordinator Molly Monahan says those are pretty typical comments and indicative of a larger problem, which is to fault the woman for what happens.
Victim blaming, which we see an enormous amount of on our campus. You know, it's never her fault that she got raped. And yet we fall back on these arguments that question what she was wearing or what she was doing or how much she had to drink.
When you talk to men, there's a high level of defensiveness. I think there's a lot of denial.
That's filmmaker and women's advocate Byron Hurt. Hurt agrees with Monahan that men don't fully comprehend their role when it comes to sexual violence.
And I think a lot of men feel like they're being attacked. And so they close down and they build up walls, or they deflect and they defer the issue onto women.
Associate Chair of Public Health Dr. Robin Sawyer views the issue of sexual assault on campus differently. The director of multiple films on college date rape, Sawyer believes a lack of communication is at the heart of the problem.
With today's culture, you're getting into sexual situations where there's very little overt discussion about what this means. You know, you put two people in a situation where their expectations and socializations are totally different, and you layer alcohol over that, and you wonder why date rape happens.
One member of our forum remembers a night when not enough questions were asked.
We were both drunk, but not like to the point of like absurdity. Go over, get a condom. Come back, she sees me put it on, go, we're going at it for about minute and a half, then she's like, just stop. I was like, okay. I was like, I'll be right back. I come back, she's like all flustered, she leaves. It's like right there, that could be considered rape.
Dr. Sawyer says he's heard this story far too often.
The majority is a regular guy, a regular woman, get drunk, get into a situation, he's thinking it's fantastic, she's thinking she's been raped, and the next day it's a mess.
But is it that simple? Can a victimization rate of 1 in 8 women on the College Park campus, as we reported earlier, come down to basic male-female miscommunication? Activist Byron Hurt, who directed a documentary that critically explores gender roles in hip-hop and rap music, and the university's sexual assault prevention coordinator Molly Monahan, say they believe our culture makes acceptable sexism and the degradation of women. Hurt says young men are negatively influenced everywhere they turn today.
I think that there's a culture of masculinity that reinforces this idea about what it means to be a man in American culture. People get cues about masculinity from hip-hop in the same way they get their cues about masculinity that they see in Girls Gone Wild.
Monahan describes this type of society as a rape culture, comprising enablers who normalize degrading behavior and bystanders who see sexism but stay silent.
That degrading against women environment makes it easier for the one or two guys who have a propensity towards violence against women to get away with it.
Sexism, miscommunication, denial, blame. Victims of rape and sexual assault have huge obstacles to overcome, and it's those obstacles which are blamed for the low number of victims actually reporting the crime. As for getting hard numbers on victims, that's proved to be a difficult game as well. TERP Weekly Edition contacted several agencies on campus who provided us with incomplete information and failed to follow through on our request for additional details. What we do know is that 116 people turned to the university's Office of the Victim Advocate for help in 2007. Yet, the Office of Student Conduct tells TERP Weekly Edition less than half a dozen cases come before them every year, and no cases came before them at all in 2007.
Wow.
That's definitely surprising.
That's kind of scary. That's pretty spectacular. Yeah. Just because, honestly, at least every weekend, like 5-10 things happening that probably fall into that category.
I'm Scott Kaptur, reporting for TERP Weekly Edition.
The advocates and studies are clear. There are far more cases of sexual assault and rape than are reported. And of those reported, only a few are successfully prosecuted or dealt with administratively on campus. Some ask, where's the justice for the victim? TERP Weekly Edition reporters Aaron Oster and Patrick Chung investigated that apparent disconnect and found that all too often, the case is stacked against the victim. Aaron Oster has their report.
I felt like they didn't really believe me. Like, they knew that what happened wasn't right, but they didn't really feel like it was worth prosecuting or that it was, you know, enough of a rape, I guess.
Stories like this are common for many victims who faced and dealt with sexual assault. According to research in a recent dissertation here at the University of Maryland, roughly 14% of all women on our campus are raped each year. That works out to just about 1,700 female students. And a National Victimization of College Women survey in 2000 found that 1 in 5 women will be raped in their college years. As if those numbers weren't troubling enough, what some might find even more startling is the fact that few of the offenders will suffer any consequences. Captain John Brandt is with the University Police Department.
I do not believe in the last 3 years we've prosecuted a rape case on the campus.
But the Prince George's County State's Attorney's Office tells Terp Weekly Edition there have been convictions of students from the University of Maryland. Still, when we asked for details, the office was unable to provide any exact numbers. Of course, to prosecute a case, you have to first make the offense known, and that's a whole other problem.
It's not reported here as much as it's happening, we know that.
That's Courtney Fisher from the Office of the Victim Advocate on campus. Fisher, along with John Zacher, Director of Student Conduct, agree. The numbers don't add up.
I certainly am aware of the data that would indicate that we have a much higher proportion of sexual assaults on our campus than are actually reported.
One of the reasons they give for underreporting, the fear of public exposure of a private matter, and what the public reaction might be.
Society sucks. Society blames the victim. Society's horrible to victims.
Others feel that it's just not worth going to the police, and very few want to go through the judicial process.
Getting through a court is still a difficult, tough, and mentally challenging process, and a lot of people just don't want that, especially right after the trauma, or close enough after the trauma, of a sexual assault or rape.
And then there are the stories about how police sometimes deal with and treat the victims. One student tells us what happened when she reported her rape to the Prince George's County Police.
One of the cops was actually, when I told him that I was telling him no, he was actually like, oh, you know, sometimes my wife and I, we play around with each other, you know, and she's like, oh, no, you know, and that's part of our foreplay. Are you sure it wasn't that? And I'm like, are you retarded? Of course I know it wasn't that.
Prince George's County Deputy State's Attorney, Patricia Smoot.
That's absolutely inappropriate. I mean, it is important for a police officer to know the circumstances involving an event. It is not for the police officer to... All they're supposed to do is get the information, not interpret it.
Terp Weekly Edition contacted the Prince George's County Police Department a number of times to give them an opportunity to respond to the allegations made by the victim. They failed to respond to our repeated efforts. Deputy State's Attorney Smoot says although everyone in the State's Attorney's Office is handpicked and trained for sensitivity in these kinds of cases, it may not be the same elsewhere.
I think that all across the judicial system, there are people who are more sensitive than others. And that's very unfortunate if that did happen to that young lady.
A victim who does decide to pursue criminal charges will find it's not an easy path to take. One of the most important factors in whether a case goes forward is how quickly the victim reports the incident, and if there's enough physical evidence to proceed.
Here is the problem. Legally, if a person is assaulted and they wait for a long time to notify anybody of the assault, it's not that we don't believe the assault didn't occur. We can't prove it.
Even if a victim does report the incident immediately and evidence is collected, the victim may still have to endure a trial, which, as the University Police Department's Captain Brandt says, isn't easy.
A court experience, something like that, is a traumatic experience, and a person who's going to do that has to be really prepared for that and braced for that, because they're going to be able, forced to get up on the stand. It's a public environment, and you're going to have to discuss your sexual assault, your rape, in a public environment, in front of an audience, with someone who is questioning your values, you know, of whether you're a good person or not.
So victims are faced with deciding. Is it really worth it? Prosecutor Smoot says it is.
People should go forward in any event. I really do think that people should talk to professionals for their mental health, for their physical health, and to stop these perpetrators from perpetrating upon other vulnerable victims again. At the end of the day, all of the victims that I've dealt with, win or lose, are better for having gone through the process.
Courtney Fisher in the campus office of the Victim Advocate says while it's worth it to some victims to pursue criminal charges, most would rather avoid it.
Not important to them. What's important to them is if they don't get pregnant, they don't get an STI, and they can sleep at night.
For students at Maryland, there's another avenue when it comes to seeking justice, the Office of Student Conduct. That's the agency on campus which oversees both the Academic Code of Integrity as well as the Code of Student Conduct. It deals with non-academic violations as well, including sexual assaults. Director of the office, John Zacher, says the victims may be more comfortable reporting to them.
The victims of sexual assault that I have worked with have reported it to our office, and it is a much smaller number that reported to the police.
The reasons given for going the Office of Student Conduct route? It's less invasive, and less evidence is needed to prove the case than what's required in criminal court.
We have a lower standard of evidence. We don't operate on a beyond a reasonable doubt. At Maryland, we operate on an evidentiary standard of clear and convincing.
Even so, the numbers speak for themselves when it comes to sexual assault and rape cases going before the Office of Student Conduct.
I'd say on average, we're talking about somewhere between 2 to 6 a year. So obviously, if you have numbers from the victim's advocate or from the health center, you know that is extraordinarily low.
But don't think you're actually going to know when a sexual assault or rape case before the Office of Student Conduct has been resolved. Vice President of Student Affairs, Dr. Linda Clement, explains.
All judicial proceedings here are private. They're not a matter of public record.
In recent years, a well-known athlete was asked to leave the university after being found responsible for a rape. That fact was never released publicly, even as the media covered his transfer to another university. Again, Dr. Clement.
Every student, whether they're an athlete or not, is entitled to the same degree of privacy. So because you are a student athlete doesn't mean that you give up that right to have your educational records be private.
Whether the victim decides to report the case to police or through the Office of Student Conduct, Captain Brandt believes that either way, it can bring a sense of justice to some victims.
It may help them psychologically, emotionally, you name it, to get up, stand up, and essentially verbally, through testimony, punch this guy.
However, most victims simply feel that going to the Office of the Victim Advocate is perhaps the best choice they can make when it comes to dealing with sexual assault. The office gives victims a chance to tell their stories in full, and, if they like, anonymously. For TERP Weekly Edition, I'm Aaron Oster.
So tell their stories, they do. But for many, the question still remains, where is the justice?
Men really need to just respect when they hear no and not take it as a game and not take it as... I guess that's the main thing, I think, is that men need to take responsibility.
It doesn't seem like it's black or white, but at the end of the day, it really is.
We have to understand that every single woman who gets hit, who is sexually harassed or sexually assaulted or raped, is somebody's mother, is somebody's sister, is somebody's daughter, is somebody's grandmother or aunt. And I think we have to personalize it in that way.
Thanks for joining us for this special TERP Weekly edition, Out of the Shadows. I'm Rustinella.
This has been an encore presentation of a TERP Weekly Edition special report, Out of the Shadows. TERP Weekly Edition is produced and written by the students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us again next week at this time when TERP Weekly Edition returns. TERP Weekly Edition brings you the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland, College Park.